listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, and Wayne is out this week, but he'll be back with us hopefully next time. He's out on assignment, so glad to be here, glad to be back and be with everybody. And this week, we have a special guest with us. You know, from time to time, we've had special guests that have received coaching or prison consulting. You know, one of the topics of the show is coaching and consulting, but also we do go into the aspects of federal prison consulting. Okay. And so our guest Deborah has experience being a consumer of those services. And so I'm so grateful that she was willing to come on our program today and share with everybody kind of her experiences with the process, with the prison consulting process, and kind of seeing that through. So, Deborah, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Absolutely. I hope I can help others who are listening.
Absolutely. You know, and it's one thing for me to say things, but it's entirely so impactful for you to be able to share your experiences, because I promise you, I've been doing this for 30 plus years, and you know, your experience is your witness to this, you know, and you know, there's subtle differences, but I really enjoyed our experiences when we were working together, and kind of want to share some of the highlights from that, if that's okay, right?
Perfect.
Okay, great. So, so suffice it to say, you had a loved one that was incarcerated within the Federal Bureau of Prisons. And as we know, the Federal Bureau of Prisons, and as you know, it's like its own world, right? I mean, they have their own vocabulary, they have their own anacronyms, their three-letter sayings, the DSCC, the GNC, the this, the that, the GCT, the FSA, the CARES, the COVID. I mean, so many codes, right? And so it's kind of, it's head spinning, I would think, as a family member to kind of get to learn the system. So kind of talk a little bit about what was that like, knowing that your loved one was going to be in this system, and how you kind of began to navigate visits and those things.
Well, as you know, it also was right at the height of the pandemic. Well, really kind of not quite the height. It was when they had already released a lot of people because of COVID, but now yeah. They were released where there really wasn't that easy release anymore. And I shouldn't say easy, but it wasn't a common thing at that point. But it's scary when you hear that your loved one is going off to an institution that you're not familiar with, that you don't know how the game is really played on the other side. There's really no way to even know because you're not there with your loved one. And you're reduced to a phone call a day at best. Of course, visitation did not happen during COVID for some time. So really, Bruce, you were essential to me in this process. And I would really encourage anybody that is entering this unfortunate circumstance in their life to really reach out for the guidance, the type of guidance that you provided for me. Put my mind at ease. It gave me peace of mind when things I didn't understand, I knew that I could call you, which you always responded immediately. Waiting 24 hours to hear back from you. The day never ended without me getting a phone call, if not immediately, within 5 minutes of a voicemail.
That's true.
And I really appreciated your bluntness. You were very blunt about everything. There was no mincing words. It wasn't in a good way. You know, you weren't trying to sugarcoat anything. You weren't trying to, you know, say words that you thought would make me feel better. You were just honest. And so this is how I know the system is working in this particular scenario or in this, you know, whatever the scene was that I was calling you about. And again, that gave me a tremendous peace of mind and really alleviated my level of concern and worry.
One of the things that I am so proud of you, and I've worked with a lot of different families and clients, okay? And And I want to say this from the heart, and it's absolute truth. You are a warrior, and I'm going to tell you why, folks. Deborah, not only so she retained us to help, if you will, maximize her loved one's experience. He was kind of caught in that COVID-19 crisis, and he had some medical issues, and we were trying to navigate several things that were running concurrently in the system, with his own ability to get medically cleared for community transfer, et cetera. So, you know, her case was a little bit different, but so just that alone, she's a warrior. But, and we didn't talk about this yesterday, so I want to breach it. I really respect how you were able to navigate not only your loved one peppering you with questions. What about this? What about that? What about, remember? And then not only that, you had your loved one's attorney who was less than helpful on the post-convictions. Remember that? And you were like, don't do that. Don't you remember all that stuff? Remember? And so you were able to, can you talk about how you were able to stand in the gap and actually give your loved one assurance and then let me handle the lawyer
possibly? Well, you know, it really, in fairness, and really to speak very positively about the lawyer's intention was really always just to be there as best he could to help.
Yeah.
So the intention was all there for the positive.
Yes.
But I would learn from you that the recipients on the other end in the federal prison did not really want to keep getting phone calls. And therefore, it could potentially reflect badly for my husband's case. And that was a big thing for you to really point out and say, look, I know that all the intentions there are all for the good, but to actually keep things going in a positive direction.
Absolutely.
That we need to keep it to the way it is now and work on getting Ross out the way the system allows him out. You know, that was the whole point. So taking the sort of the facts of the prison, the laws of the prison into play instead of facts of the case on the outside.
Yeah, the facts of the case, right. And it's kind of, and you and I kind of touched on this yesterday, you know, hey, there might have been things about his case that were just complete bullshit, right? Or they're non-sequiturs or false or whatever. And even though myself and, you know, Mr. Santana is a lawyer, we don't, right? It's too late for that. He's already been ordered to this prison, you know what I mean? Whether it was by good means or bad means, you know what I mean? Still having to serve this sentence, it just kind of dictates our activities. And so not that I'm not sensitive to bullshit cases that get people wound up. And I shared a couple with you yesterday. Wow, I can't believe, you know, this person was in federal prison over a $30,000, you know, FHA loan or something, you know, is crazy, you know? So I appreciate you willing to kind of persevere and get through that.
Awesome.
Go ahead.
Oh, pardon. I interrupted.
No, go ahead.
Well, I think what's also so important is that for anyone dealing with this kind of circumstance, it really doesn't help anyone in the process to whine and complain and be upset. It's almost that you've got to just look forward to what is and how we're moving forward in the most logical way that works for everybody. Including the system, including the folks at the federal prison. I mean, it helps to have you as the middle person on things when you know some of the people that work there and you know the right, it's wrong to say the right people.
Yeah, I know.
People to call that you're not wasting other people's time is my point.
Exactly, and that's that delicate balance too, because I think a lot of family members and inmates overestimate the institution's power. Now, make no mistake about it, the institution has power. But like even with the halfway house placement or back in the day when we had CARES Act, remember those CARES things that people were getting out on? Basically, all the institution does is do the paperwork and send it up to the region. And the big decisions are made at the region, right?
That was huge.
Yeah, it's not. And so, right. So as a family member, as an inmate, so I went to team and they recommended 150 to 180 days of halfway house. I'm just saying. And so the inmate thinks that that's going to happen. It may not. It depends on what the bed space is. And it depends on what the region says. Right. I want to get out on CARES Act, this and that and the other. Well, that may be true. They send it up, but there was a CARES Act committee or two that decided who went out on CARES Act, right? And so those decisions took place independent of the facility. And so that adds this other layer of bureaucracy that's frustrating for you, possibly, frustrating for your loved one. Maybe your family members are saying, what the heck's going on? Why isn't this happening? Why isn't that happening? So then you would call, or you didn't, though, because you really understood. You really understood the process. You were a quick study. So, and I appreciate you and your patience.
Well, Bruce, honestly, the reason that I didn't call all the time, because we had that upfront conversation, and you said, look, I know it's going to be frustrating when you see sort of the light at the end of the tunnel, but you don't see the paperwork being pushed. But understand, it's just part of the process, and just have patience.
Right.
And if you told me that, it just, I know, of course, my loved one was very anxious to have a result, but you would always be very calm and say, it's a process, and it's best you can be patient with the process.
Or finally, once that paperwork finally hit the region, and then I got confirmation, I'm like, okay, finally it's going to happen, and it finally happened. So, and believe me, Deborah, I was as happy as you were, probably.
I was going to say, that's the other thing I really, really enjoyed working with you. It's just, you genuinely care about the people that you're there for, and it's apparent and it's obvious, and you know how to make it happen in a way that works really well for the institution as well.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate that. So, well, really good. I want to get to some of the correctional basics. We didn't discuss that, but I know our listeners are dying to know. Now, you had the blessing, I might say, that your loved one was designated to a prison that was relatively close to where you live. And so that was a blessing. You're not one of those family members that had 4 or 5 or 6 hours, or God forbid, take a plane. So that was really good. So let's just talk about the visitation experience. What, as you're beginning to visit the prison, what would you tell other family members kind of starting? What kind of tips are?
For me in particular, I did see some other visitors become really impatient with the staff there or the security. And I kind of always tried to take my moment to say, be patient with them. It's not easy on them, So let's all just kind of all work it. So like everyone's fine. And really for the most part, that was the case. There was one young lady that came to visit her father, and this is a positive story, actually. She had come visit her father, and she had flown all the way from Haiti, and she transferred in Florida, and then she came to this prison in Texas, and she didn't have the right code of dress on, and it wasn't bad. It's just she had these slacks that were too thin, and they really weren't see-through, but the code for the rules was that she was not appropriately dressed. So they had to tell her, no, I'm sorry. And she just burst into tears. Please, will you let me see my dad? And actually the security guard at the time said, well, can you go to your car and get us the proof of your flights? And when she showed them that, they said, we're going to approve you to go see your dad. So, there's human nature that goes along with it. I would say for anybody visiting a loved one, just try to be as patient as you can with things that might not seem to make sense to you, but it is what it is. I mean, we had to wear masks at one point, and then it was mask free, but you weren't really supposed to go mask free. I remember the first time that I went, my loved one was there, and he went to touch my shoulder just because he hadn't seen me in so long. And you can't do that. He's like, because it was COVID, the rules were that you couldn't even like touch any. Anyway, but COVID's no longer there. So that's a good thing. And really the visitations were very easygoing. I mean, the room was, people seemed, families are getting together. They're happy, they're happy to see each other. And, there's certain times you can stay longer, or you might be like me, who after I was there for about an hour, that was 2 hours. I think I would stay for like 2 hours. But does that answer your question? I mean, my biggest advice would be the fear of the unknown is perhaps the worst fear. And that can be exaggerated in your own mind. Mm-hmm. So take a pause before you are fearing the unknown and try to work within what's working instead of.
And you know what? That's where, not so much in your case, but there's what about this and what about that and what about, you know, this fear of the unknown and having somebody like myself that may be able to answer some of those questions, but also like I will yield because that institution does their visitation differently than another institution.
Right.
You know, I was actually an administrator of an institution in Louisiana years and years ago, and I always bought pairs of women's sweats and sweatshirts. And so when that case would happen, the lady would come in with some less than or more than exposed. I said, if you're willing to wear these sweats and look like a, you know, an inmate, you know,
the option for them.
And you know what? The lady's covered.
Yeah.
And she got her visit.
The only thing I would tell anyone in this type of circumstance, definitely read the rules and regulations of what you can and cannot wear. It's real and it's true and it's there for reasons that actually do make sense. Maybe not your personal situation, but in the overall, it's kind of like anything. You make one exception to a rule and then everyone wants to have that exception. And you just can't start bending the rules for certain people and not for others. So that's a pretty hard list.
Very, very well said. Let me ask you this question. Did you ever read the inmate handbook that was available online, or you just read the visitation regulations that were given to you?
I read the inmate handbook.
You did? All right. You read the whole inmate handbook.
I did.
So you would recommend people doing that, right?
Absolutely. And you don't have to read it. You can skim over certain sections. That's fine. But the thing that's really helpful is that it's all there for you to know.
So it is.
That eliminates the guessing game. And I wouldn't look upon it at first. I thought it was going to be so tedious and stressful and I can't believe I'm in this situation. But if you really sit yourself down and just say, okay, let me go through this, I think it's almost gives you peace of mind because there's no, the unknown has answers after reading.
It does. Good points. I'd like to move on to another area that a lot of wives and loved ones will ask about, is the whole notion of commissary. How much, if you don't, you can take the fifth, obviously, but did you have a monthly amount that was suitable that you felt that your loved one could live under? I mean, how was the commissary experience? And then were you able to mail in books or Amazon stuff or whatever? Go ahead.
Yes. In fact, I didn't do the mailing of the books.
Right. Comes direct.
A lot of friends and family that really loved doing that. It made them part of the process and made them connected to the inmates. So, you could receive books anytime. And in fact, ended up sharing the books with other inmates. I think there were a lot left in the library there when he left. But the commissary for our situation, there was a maximum per month that you could put in.
What was it? Do you mind sharing that? What was it?
360,
yeah. That's what it is for, okay.
And, but actually, we kind of really worked where we were actually able to budget even less than that per month.
Good.
So it all worked, that worked out.
Good.
So you just have to portion how you're spending, obviously, and like anything in life. And,
right.
And also just, you know, have, the commissary really was a great everything to have the commissary there, as you can imagine.
Once you
get a chance to go there and you can just buy the things that are the staples that you need, whether it's
right. Exactly.
So, of course, the food there. But you know, that works out too. It's that shouldn't be something, in my personal experience, I did not find that to be something that was a difficult challenge to deal with.
Good. No, that's really good to hear. It's good that they had that kind of flat maximum. So you kind of knew what your parameters were.
I think Yeah, there's the, that's when the budget comes in, you know, where you just have to say, okay. And then I guess as you start to see what the prices are there.
Right.
I think the first time that it was at the commissary, like, you spend so much in one fell swoop, and then you're like, oh, well, okay, got to change that next time.
You know? Yeah, it takes a while to get in that rhythm. And you don't want to have too much stuff in your locker because you don't want to be given the appearance that you're running your own store out of your locker and stuff like that.
Very true. I don't know this for a fact, but I think also, I would say just be cautious not to be too
hoarderish. Yeah,
exactly. That's
live,
the word.
Live leanly. Yeah,
but you might need power shoes.
Yeah. Maybe just like, not much. Right. Exactly. Well, real good. Thanks for sharing that. Now, did you, during your course of your loved one's stay, did you happen to have any, and I think you did, you had interactions with the correctional counselor, the case manager, any of the executive staff? Did you have interactions with BOP staff?
Hey, to tell you the truth, I actually, once we could resume visitation, which wasn't, it was maybe 6 months that I could because of COVID. And by the way, I appreciated that because we were being protected. They have to protect the, you know, the spread in the facility. So it was necessary to have have no visitation. But once we started visitation and I would see some of the same security guards there when I walk in, they I was like, hey, how are you today? How's it going? After I saw them several times. And in fact, it would one time, one of the security guards, he said, gosh, you know, your loved one is really starting to walk a little faster these days. It's good to see. I'm like, thank you for sharing, you know, little things like that. They were very kind. And I, during my visitations, at least what I saw. So, and then the case managers were fantastic. I mean, I really didn't deal with case managers very often. It wasn't until towards the end, but again, extremely just matter of fact. Here's the deal. Here's the next step. Here's what could happen instead of this next step. And then they just tell you the things you have to follow as a household and stick to that.
Right. All right. Okay. All right. Back. Can you hear me? There you go.
Sorry.
It's okay. There you go. Good. And so that's
the whole, go ahead. Also highlight. It was the one of the key things that happened from the start is that you were able to help with the placement. It's not anyone's fault. It's just you're kind of just that ping pong ball that just drops somewhere and you're put somewhere. So when you were able to hear that the location, we really want to be close to home, you were able to just call and say, look, if there's an open space here, this is where we'd like to go. And it fell within the ramifications of his situation. So that started the whole process in a positive way.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I retired from the Grand Prairie area, and the Grand Prairie area is where all the deportations and transfers go to. Okay. So that's where inmate placement takes place is in Grand Prairie. And so.
Yes, actually, I did know that.
Yeah, I'm not being patronizing. I'm doing this for our viewers. But anyway.
No, I don't. But I remember specifically knowing, like, what are the chances? Here we are.
Oh, right. Yeah. So we were retained early enough that when the loved one was sentenced, we were able to interface with the attorney to say, hey, recommend these two or three institutions that are close to the loved one's family, that are lowest security and safe, and will be able to provide for their program or medical needs.
Woo! Sorry. That's a non-tech person I am.
I know how it is, but very good. So we were able to recommend some facilities that were then placed on the judgment and commitment order. The judgment commitment order is a crucial piece of paper because once the person is sentenced, they go from the judicial branch of government to the executive branch of government. And so the Bureau of Prisons is the executive branch of government that goes to the designation center. They'll look at the pre-sentence report, look at his criminal record, his points, and those things, and they'll look at the judgment commitment order, and they'll see if the judge recommends a facility, and that works, and they have a bed open, they'll put them there. Now, one thing I want to let everybody know and remember is that the judge really has no authority to tell the BOP what to do. The judge can recommend to the BOP. The judge can recommend, but the judge can't tell the BOP what to do. The only thing the judge really has the power to do moving forward would be to change the sentence. Okay, so we had some COVID cases where they didn't get COVID, but they did a 2241, and the judge said, you know what? I'll change the sentence, and I'll take 6 months off the sentence, or I'll take a year off. Well, that's fine. The judge wants to take time off the sentence. The BOP, we're more than willing to oblige that, right? Because that's not us. We're merely the containment area. We don't dictate how long a guy stays. Now, we kind of do with First Step Act and a year off for drug programs, and that never really played out for you, right, in your situation. But anyhow, so thank you for bringing that up. So, yes, we were able to get a location that was close to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So look, and also just everything you just said just now, those are facts that might sound obvious, but you don't know these facts.
Don't know that. For
the whole system. So even it's more, I mean, I actually really did think that
the judge had
foundation, and then that happens automatically, but no. That's not the case. And then when you explain that, that makes sense. I mean, they're the ones that the BOP has to juggle all these different numbers of people that they're managing. So mm-hmm. it's not that they're trying to not make it happen to a place that was requested, but if it's not open, if there's no seats, beds available.
And it, they have like that ping pong ball, boom. And then what's open that moment. And and if that's a bad place, usually the inmate has to stay there 18 months to 2 years before they'll even think about a transfer, right?
Wow.
Oh, yeah. So it's not like, oh, well, we're just going to put you on a van and this and that. Oh, no. You know, so it's really good to get that advocacy retained early on to get everything off to a right foot, right? And so that really played out well here.
And as you said, the timing of that is important so that there's not, you, if you lag too long in time, once you're placed. So
right. Of course, unless you go for a program transfer or a medical transfer,
there are a couple of transfers that we saw happen because it's a medical facility that he was at, but, Bruce literally from the beginning, I can't reiterate to the listeners, I mean, peace of mind for me. I no longer had to fear the unknown because I could call you with any concerns or call you. I remember one time in particular, maybe it was a couple of times, when I did actually have a phone call every day. And so when that phone call didn't happen and I would be worried, and you would reassure me and say, if you're not getting a call from anyone at the facility that works there, everything's fine. You know, like, don't worry when you can't hear
right.
from your.
You know, let's talk about that, because so much of this is a waiting game. How did you? Right. I mean, you knew you had me. You knew we were working for you. You knew that we were doing everything we could do. And we know that systems were in place to get your loved one further down the road to release, right? He had to go through some things to get to that point, obviously. But how did you cope with the waiting? How did you develop patience?
That's a very good question. I didn't have a lot of patience certain times, just to be totally honest. You know, it was like, and therefore... not really good coping mechanisms in certain circumstances, but I think that that becomes something that the key, the patience is so essential. If you can try to have that, if you find that within yourself, and you don't, if you're losing it, keep bringing it back in, because that's what, what's going to help you through the process, because literally there's nothing you can do to change anything at all. So as long as you know that as you're dealing with the system, then you don't feel like something could be happening that I'm just not doing enough of, or I could be doing this. And there again falls where you were so valuable, because I knew that whatever I wasn't doing, it, there wasn't anything I could be doing, because you had been telling me about what we should be doing anyway, you know? So there was no gap of space and time that.
Thank God your loved one is home, because now the BOP has created this First Step Act provisional release date with First Step Act credits, but they're not telling the inmate what that date is, because it's a floating date plus or minus 1 day. And so then I get calls from loved ones and wives saying, what can I do to get that date? I'm like, ma'am, there is nothing you can do. You will never get that date. It's on only one screen. I can probably get access to it, but you can't, your lawyers can't. So what, you know what I mean? It's like, wow. I mean, they're, you know, they don't want to hear that. You mean to tell me there's nothing I can do? There is nothing you can do with that. And it's, that's hard to accept, isn't it?
You know, it is, but I think that's the advice I would give to anybody. Instead of getting frustrated with what you don't think is making sense for your world, again, just be patient about how things are going, because really, again, Bruce, if you thought that there was more to be done to expedite, to give a date or this, you would make it happen.
Right.
So it's, again, you can't change, but you can't change. And so not to get frustrated with what you can't change is probably.
And that's why with my clients, and you know this, and we took the time, and me and you and Jose have spent plenty of time together, haven't we, over the years? So, but it's a good thing. But
I've learned more about the BOP than I never thought I would.
Right. But I feel that part of our value add was we explained everything we were doing.
Yes.
It goes here, then it goes here, and then the committee does this, and then this happens. We did this. We interacted with the regional office in this capacity. We did this. We checked on this in this capacity. And so I feel we were an open book. This is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. And then to say, and that's it. Then we get to the end. And now we wait. Right?
Well, and I'll also add, it wasn't that we had to wait a day or two to hear from you.
No.
It was like immediate, you know, but then the waiting, I'm sure I called a couple of times, like, any news? And, you know, that's kind of, you're probably used to that, you know, even though you would call if you had news, but, you know, you're sitting around thinking, well.
But you know what? Doesn't it make you feel better that you could call me and vent or ask a question?
Are you there? I can't hear. Huh. Mine's not muted.
I'm back. There I am. Hey. Technical difficulties. It works both ways. So, right. It gives you a peace of mind that you can call me and say, listen, I am 100% sure we're just waiting for the region to make a decision. And that would make you feel good, didn't it? You could just call. Okay.
Then I'll take it to 150%. Yes. That's when the waiting game became more tolerable for me, because I knew that you knew all the facts about how it works. And therefore, but if I didn't have you to call about that,
right,
you just don't feel like you're going to get any answers, because you're not going to.
Well, yeah, and you and I had calls. I don't know if you remember them, but you'd have like, okay, where are we? And I'd be like, okay. So they started the paperwork, and it's working.
Yes.
way through the institution. You're like, what do you mean? I mean, yeah, it's got.
I did.
Oh, gosh. It's got to go to the case management coordinator. It's got to go to the associate warden. It's got to go to the warden. It's got to go to the region. It's got to go to the regional specialist. Regional specialist pulls it out of the box, gets it to the right person. They assign it, right? And you're thinking, are you kidding me? Are you guys that messed up? And I'm like, yes. That's how it was.
There's nothing you can do about it. Well, you know, and also there's just so much that has to be done for everything there. So I don't claim to understand the system that I don't work within. So it's just helpful for you to guide me during that process. That's really the theme I want to tell anybody. Like, having the guidance of someone like you who is in the know of how things are working, hands-on, firsthand experience, then that just changes the whole dread of the whole process.
You know, and I'll say this, you know, oftentimes people hire people like myself thinking that they're going to get some sort of edge or some sort of more time. Sometimes that happens. I'm not going to lie, because we're able to get in there and get these referrals, and it results maybe in a month or two or three more months, depending on the bed space issue or a quicker resolution on a jail time credit gap, which gets the person out earlier once they rectify. Anyway, you didn't have that issue. But it is so hard, and I want you to back me on this. It is so hard, I think, just to get the inmate what they have coming in a timely manner.
Yes.
That makes sense?
It does. And that's something that you told me straight up in the beginning. That we're looking at, I mean, this is, we're not changing this around. I mean, the sentence is a period.
It's just like, hey, So, like you said, during that routing process, and I think for you guys, it was like the CARES Act. So that was another routing process. It was a separate routing process for CARES Act consideration and a separate committee. So it's like double the work, which is fine. We I love it. No. We loved
well,
it.
Like, yeah, true, exactly. And a separate committee. So you've got a whole different type that you're, right. Or different people you're working with.
For us to say, hey, where is this? Like, oh, shit, yeah, he's over here in this pile. Let's move it from point A to point B. Shoot, that's a $2,000 call. I mean, you know, in a sense, not really. I'm just messing. But you know what I mean? Because had that call or that hadn't happened, the guy would have sat there longer. Sure, they would have gotten to it, but in their own damn time. It's the government. I was there. You know what I mean? So having that, I think, really helps. And it helps the person get what they have coming. And you would think, well, why am I paying taxpayer money? Of course the government should do it in a timely manner. It's like, but it doesn't happen that way sometimes. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox.
Right. Different, clearly, and every facility is different. But I just think in general, it's kind of no surprise that it is a process that is, even when you think you're – that's the other piece of advice I would say. As you're nearing these dates that are thrown out of, well, it looks like you're going to be home, and the inmates told they're going to be home because they think they might be. But then there's all that other stuff that has to happen, which then gets delayed. And then you have your loved one that's frustrated, and you're frustrated because you're waiting for your loved one to be home. And you know, but again, I would just take a pause and just say it all works itself out in the timing that is in its own time. But again, knowing that I could call you and say, what's going on? You reiterated to me to be patient all the time.
I say that. I mean, not just to you. I mean, I have to be patient with myself.
Yeah.
I'm a high spirited guy and I don't like it either. If things are unnecessarily delayed or whatever. And I've had institutions have the gall and crust to actually ignore me and Jose. And it's like, that's not acceptable. We would just take it to the next level real quick, you know. And they're going to understand that wasn't necessarily a good thing to do. as stewards of the public trust. And again, when I was in that chair as a BOP official, I always called back the family member. I always called them. They might not like what I say, but I would say, ma'am, you know, he can't go home for the funeral trip. But, you know, it was his, you know, ma'am, I'm sorry, you know, whatever, you know, but I would still at least interface with the family member and give them the policy name and number.
Hard one when you have to tell someone you can't go home for that, but
it's tough.
You can't if it's like the rules are the rules. You may start making exceptions in certain categories.
Even your loved one, had your loved one, God forbid, if there was a death in the family, your loved one would have had to have, he may have been able to go to the funeral, but he would have had to pay tens of thousands of dollars for guard service.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Oh, well, he can go if he has a two-man escort. Great. $10,000. You got to pay the salary of these guys. What? I didn't. Well, they're not. You know, yeah. It's. So anyway, I won't go into that that whole thing because that didn't apply to you. So
didn't deal with any of that. I reiterate that you always, like I said earlier, you always were very matter of fact about everything. And I think some people, one of the things we worked really well together on as your client is that I accepted when you told me the facts about something. I didn't whine back saying, "Well, why not this or that, why that?" Which is a common direction to go because you're frustrated not knowing. But I really did appreciate your bluntness on everything. And I appreciated that I could know that whatever you were telling me straight was a straight, true answer.
The reason why I'm so blunt, it's not because I'm a bad person, which I'm not. I mean, I am, but I'm not. But I'm not a bad person. The reason why I'm so blunt is because the inmates get filled with rumors and inmate.com and all these unicorn stories, right? And they bring these unicorn stories to you. I know this guy, and he had the same case as I did. He's already home. I know this. He was an armed bank robber, and he is already home. And you hear these stories, and you think, you know what I mean? You can't do that. You know, and they're always comparing themselves to this other guy who's the unicorn. Well, you know what, folks, federal prison, you don't know what kind of, if he's even telling the truth, you don't know what kind of deal he cut. Don't even be in anybody else's business but your own business. And so I think, right, that's why I'm like.
Yes, don't be in anybody but your own business. That's another thing that is exactly.
Right.
Because everything can be handled in its own way and ways. Again, reiterating the things that you cannot change, try not to get frustrated with the things that you cannot change and just know that you have an advocate with you if they're wise enough to.
Yeah. And it is kind of a serenity prayer thing, you know, recognize the things that I cannot change and the wisdom to know the difference. You know what I mean? And that's where. On that wisdom to know the difference on what we can affect and what we can't, try to bring that on to you. So very, very well said. Very well said. Is there something that could have been done differently? Is there any, if you had to do something differently, what would that be? Any advice you would impart on another family member going into a situation?
I would say hire you guys immediately.
Well, thank you. That was unsolicited. That was unsolicited.
It helps everybody. I feel like it even helps the institution as well because
I'll tell you how it helps the institution. If you know you have me and we're kind of overseeing the process, he doesn't have to go into his case manager and bother him. He doesn't have to go into his counselor.
Exactly.
Ask. Like, get out of my office, man.
Yeah, because that nagging would be irritating, as we know it, and they get it a lot.
Yeah.
But that's the solace in having you on board is. I'm really glad that we needed to reach out.
And you're
Mr. Window, but you got it.
No, it was I really am grateful to you and yeah, you're fantastic, you know, family to work with. I know that, it was an interesting time in correctional history that you guys lived through. This COVID thing was for real. Remember they had the COVID tent out there? People were dying at that facility, you know? Do you remember that?
Yes. Maybe
come on.
When I was there.
Yeah.
They released so many people by the time.
Gosh. And then, you have this other medical procedure. Like, oh my gosh, and we got to get that going underway and then get that scheduled. And so that's always a challenge when there's a medical care that's standing, you know, as part of that package. And so I think we were able to navigate those waters.
Yes.
And get something that was, we got what we got, but it was better than, I'm telling you, and I'll tell you again, that it was way better than what you would have gotten organically. You know what I mean?
Yes, very so.
Absolutely certain of that. So,
yes. And my loved one would agree as well. So wholeheartedly.
And tell him, say hello, by the way. Tell him we're thinking of, glad to, we're just happy for you, your family. How is it, real quick, how is it to have your loved one back home, and how's your family feel, and how's that been going?
Oh, it's been going fantastic. We just love it. It's just picks up where we left off and keep on going. And if you keep having that attitude, then you don't look back with such regret. If you just keep living through challenges, try to stay as positive within yourself.
Thank you for sharing that. And that's the power of family visitation. You staying in regular contact, visiting him. And so that way, when they do come home, that adjustment period isn't as big of an adjustment. Of course, it's going to be a big adjustment coming home, but because he knows what's been going on with the family and you know what I mean? They know the current events. They know the family events. They don't have to catch up on all this stuff. All it is just kind of getting used to who's supervising you. Hey, did he have to go to the halfway house and do urine once a week for a while? Can you share that?
Yes. Okay. Yes. That definitely.
Right.
That's the process. We expected that. That was going to happen.
A collar offender. Why is he pissing in a cup? He's not a drug guy. Hey, it's just part of the deal. You know what I mean? So I know it's kind of funny, but it's the way.
Sometimes your ankle monitor can start going on the fritz, even though it's on.
Do they bother you at 4 a.m. or anything on the ankle? Do they make early morning?
They have to, because if they can't detect it, it's not their fault. It's the machine. But I actually was told by the case manager that is common.
It is common.
She said, I know it's frustrating. It frustrates to us that happens, but it does happen. So if you get a call at like 3 a.m, it's even though he's lying in bed with the ankle, you know, it does happen. But so again, like the expectations, as long as you kind of can be prepared for what things could happen, it alleviates the frustration when it's happening.
Exactly. Well, there you go. That was it. That's the end of the show. So folks, Deborah, thank you so much for coming onto the show. Maybe we'll have you come back in 5 or 6 months. I know you said you had a lot more you wanted to share. So we definitely want to get that going. Folks, come by our Facebook group at Concierge Coaches Show. What else do we have? Our Instagram is Concierge_Coaches. You know, we are on Apple Podcasts, iHeartMedia, Amazon, Audible picked us up. I mean, we're the little podcast that could. That's all free for you. You can go to the LA Talk Radio website, download today's podcast, or view it on your computer or device. So, yes. There it is, another fantastic episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Debbie, take care. We'll see you later. And everybody, have a blessed week, and we'll see you next time.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Wayne Fritz, only on LA Talk Radio.